time, weather, and...
Always! Pass.
Veteran of three foreign wars, entrepreneur, and warrior poet, Tony Arterburn takes on the issues facing our country, civilization, and planet. This is the Arterburn Radio Transmission.
Understand what I'm talking about? What is our common bond truly? Freedom. Freedom. Without freedom, you can't be a Christian no matter what denomination you belong to. You can't be a Buddhist. You can't own a donut shop. You can't drive from here to Oregon. You can't be an American because that's what it's all about, and that's the only thing that it's all about. Nothing else. Nothing else. It's about freedom.
It is indeed about freedom, ladies and gentlemen. That's the only thing. Well, folks, welcome to the Arterburn Radio Transmission. It has been a while, a little over a month since I've done a live broadcast. A lot has happened since then. I've been traveling into Anarcapoco and Acapulco, Mexico. Been back and forth between Texas and Branson, Missouri. A lot going on, building Wise Wolf, building Wolf Pack. We've had a couple of shows. I've released some stuff onto the feed. We had a great paratrooper about remote viewing. If you haven't heard that, you should go check it out. And some great paratroopers coming out very soon. We got one we're going to do on the moon and moon mysteries. So that ought to be fun. But I just got done with the David Knight show and a lot of house cleaning to do here on the Arterburn Radio Transmission. It is the 7th of March, year of our Lord, 2024. Yesterday was the anniversary of the fall of the Alamo, and weird synchronicities always happen to me, by the way. So yesterday I got back to my cabin. I was staying at my off-grid place in Northwest Arkansas, and I keep this little pad. You know, it's not an iPad, but I can play video, and I watch. I'm a nerd, so I watch old Twilight Zones, old Star Treks. I can't plug into anything modern. Pop culture gives me indigestion and possible aneurysms. So I was watching an episode of Star Trek, the Deep Space Nine one, and they were arguing, it's one of the final seasons, they were arguing about did Davy Crockett die at the Alamo? And I thought, this is like a deep philosophical, historical question that comes up amongst historians and Texas lore. And I thought about that. It was that was the episode that was playing last night on the anniversary, March 6th, which is the fall of the Alamo. You had 13 days under siege, kind of like 13 days of the Cuban Missile Crisis. But the Alamo, you know, had 187 defenders. Who knows how many Mexican soldiers they killed, but it's upwards to probably between 700 to 1,500. Killed by the 187 defenders of the Alamo. And the way that the Mexican soldiers supposedly got over the walls was they climbed over the bodies of their fellow soldiers who fell in front of them. And one of the reasons is because the defenders of the Alamo had, they used what was called grape shot. It was like a giant shotgun. They packed these big cannon full of just pieces of iron and other, you know, other debris and other thing. They pack it really tight and they blow it out like a giant shotgun. So it was very deadly. It's very brutal. But one of the, I'll get off on some history here. I didn't plan on this either. I love, this is where my brain goes to hide from the headlines, but we're going to get to that. But there's a story that at the end of the siege of the Alamo, Davy Crockett was found alive. And the brother-in-law for General Santa Anna, his name was General Koss. Supposedly, Koss wrote in his memoirs that Davy Crockett was still alive, and he begged for his life. Not Davy Crockett begged for his life, but Koss begged Santa Anna, his brother-in-law, just spare this man, you know, spare this man. and Santa Ana had him executed anyway. That's why they've, you know, before the siege of the Alamo, the Mexican army raised the blood red flag of no quarter at the steeple of the church in town in San Antonio there to show the defenders that there was no getting out. And I think that's where a lot of us are politically. You know, I'm going to talk a little bit today. It's fortuitous that I start off my Thursday's recording right after the David Knight show that I look on Zero Hedge, and there's an article from my good friend Don Jeffries. I just texted him and said, your article is up on Zero Hedge, and I wanted to congratulate him. And I need to, for those of you, bear with me. I have to type everything back in again. I'm running a live stream, and for some reason, all the stories fell off. But Don put out a great article on the Trumpenstein Project when I can find it again. I just had it everything up, and then somehow it's gone. But Don put up an article that we're going to go over today. And I definitely want to go over that and some financial news. We'll do some house cleaning here on the show. And what I mean by that is, just like I announced with David, that we are going to start recording this program, which is my weekly radio program. It goes out on different radio stations and freeworld.fm. This is going to be recorded on Thursday. So 11 a.m. Central Time, following the David Knight Show, we will record the Arterburn radio transmission. And next week, I'm going to basically do a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday recording time at 11 a.m. Central Time. Tuesday is going to be the Wise Wolf Golden Crypto Show. We'll do a live show there. Wednesday, I'm going to start doing Paratruthers Live. And so it's going to be less headlines, more history. I'll probably just do, pick a subject. We'll do a deep dive into it. It'll be interactive. If you want to chime into the program, you definitely can do that. So I just wanted to keep it interesting. We're definitely going to go into some headlines and all that entails. As soon as I can pull up the article again, I had this, it's so frustrating. This is like when you lose like a little momentum, and I've got everything pulled up here. Maybe somebody can send it to me in the chat. I had it pulled up. Everything was good. I had Don Jeffries' article, and then it's gone. So I may have to do like a search for it, or we may have to, at least give you some other headlines. Well, we'll see. We'll see. This is going to be fun. I might have to put it into Zero Hedge search or something. I just had it up and then I don't have it. So I was talking to David Knight about two different sets, and this will go up on the feed too. If you watch me on David Knight today, we talked a little bit about Bitcoin, we talked a little bit about gold, and the two things are going on at the same time. One, gold hit its all-time high. Two, Bitcoin hit its all-time high. And at the same, when those are both happening at the same time, and then you have the analysts on all major networks are wondering why is it happening? What's happening with gold? And they can't figure it out. They're like, well, we know Jerome Powell has announced and hinted he's going to lower interest rates, but that shouldn't have made gold hit its all-time high again. Well, you know, this is where we are in the clown show, because these analysts, the financial elite, the teleprompter readers, they really don't get it, folks. They don't get the fact that the de-dollarization, the massive move away from the dollar, it's happening all over the globe, and they're covering that up. You know, they don't want you to know that this is going to have implications far-reaching into society, into our economy, and that this is just the beginning. There was another parallel headline that I saw where the BRICS nations. And we were going to read that too. For some reason, I don't have that on my feed anymore as well. Well, we were going to talk about that. It's absolutely insane. The BRICS nations. I'll pull this, if I can pull that up. Maybe we can get, I'll have to go to Don Jeffries' Substack. Maybe I'll just pull up donaldjeffries.media. His article was up on Zero Hedge. I know it's there, but when you're live and you're trying to, get everything at the same time. Trumpenstein and the Death of Politics. There it is. I have it up on his Substack. I had to go to his website. And we'll get to that in a second. But let me pull up this article from Natural News. And, you know, this is, I talked about this on with David today. And I have to say, I'm not excited about politics. I don't have a dog in the fight. I used to be very much involved in politics. I ran for office. I ran for Congress. You know, I got to see how a lot of the primary process worked because of my relationship with my friend, Congressman Ralph Hall. It has been an absolute honor to have been a part of some of that process. But at the same time, I step back and I look at it now, and it's just horrifying because I know that it's so much of a dead end. And that is unfortunate. And you rattle a lot of people's cages. You destroy a lot of their hopes. You know, people are putting a lot of their hope in. I don't want to be that guy. But I will say, I have to, if when it comes down to it, I'm going to give you the best analysis that I can. So give me a chance. I mean, I already put out content that I know will make me lose listeners. I already know that. I already know that because I'm putting out content on 9:30 a.m. The Answer in San Antonio. I'm putting it on my podcast feed. I was talking to my dad. We were having dinner this last week, and I said, I should send, you know, Trump an invoice. He's costing me a couple million dollars. And what I mean by that is, because I give my analysis that isn't, you know, I'm not one of these MAGA sycophants that just everything's good and great. And we're literally going to do 2016 over again. I have a really hard time processing that, you know, and even my family, they're like, well, you should really get off of that. And this is why, the QAnon and we're getting all that stuff that it's going to be great. And now we're really going to get them on the run. And I just don't buy it. I mean, how many times do you have to get hurt by somebody? It's like an abused spouse or something. Like I can't cover up, but I will say a lot of you have your own opinion. That's fine. But I'm going to give you some analysis. I think Don Jeffries really nailed it with the Trump and Stein designation and what that means. And we'll just get into that. And you guys can make up your own mind. I'm not telling you, because I know that there's a lot of there's a lot of emotion behind it. There's a lot of expectation. There's a lot of hope and all that stuff with the 2024 election. I'm looking to local. I'm looking to moves that we can make ourselves in a parallel system. That's what I'm hoping for. But let's look at this article that's up on Zero Hedge. And then, well, actually, this is Natural News. Let me put this up real quick. I want to read this, and then we'll jump into that article by my friend Donald Jeffries. All right, stand by. Let me put this up here. This is Natural News again. BRICS, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, to create blockchain-based payment system. And this is from a Putin aide. And this is happening, folks. This is not a drill. And again, why this is not like the major headline across the world, you do your own research. You figure that out for yourself. It's the dog that doesn't bark, which is the mainstream media. The BRICS group of emerging economies plans to create a payment system based on digital technologies. And this is from Yuri Yusikov, a senior foreign policy aide to Russian President Vladimir Putin, has told TASS in an interview published on Tuesday. According to Yushikov, the system would be outside of politics and would not depend on national agendas or the fiat currencies of countries around the globe. We believe that an important goal for the future is the creation within BRICS framework of an independent settlement payment system that would be based on the most modern technology, such as digital currencies and blockchain. It would be comfortable for any state, person, and business, and would not require significant cost. Well, this is in direct competition with the SWIFT system and the dollar system itself. And you, again, using blockchain technology, and this is just the one of the facets of it, because the other facet of BRICS is revaluing all commodities. You know, you talk about I've said this before, but you know, the philosopher Nietzsche talked about the transvaluation of all values, in the modern era, like where you just, you know, the revaluation of all things between good and evil. This is the revaluation of all currencies. And for so long, decades and decades, since the end of World War II, the United States has dominated not only the currency system, but the commodity system and how things are priced. Well, you're watching the BRICS nations, which, again, 40, just BRICS alone without adding the other S of Saudi Arabia. And then there's 25 other countries that are on the waiting list for BRICS. That's 40% now increasing of the world's population, a third of its GDP. And you're going to watch them move away and create a parallel system because of the arrogance of the people in Washington, D.C., because of the weaponization of the dollar, because this current crop of whatever you want to call them, leaders that are running this country, the United States of America, have no interest in the betterment of the United States of America. Has anybody caught on to that yet? We're always bogged down in endless wars. We've got an open border. We've got 700 bases in 132 countries. We got we weaponized the dollar, isolating everyone. We don't do big deals anymore. You notice that? Like, you say what you will about past presidents, and you go back to the 1960s with the emergence of Richard Nixon in 1968 and him bringing on Henry Kissinger. You say what you will about those guys, but you know, they opened China for good or ill. There was deals on the table. They had something called the SALT Treaty, which is the Strategic Arms Limitations Agreement with Brezhnev and the Soviet Union. They had something called detente. This was, fast forward to Reagan, you had Reykjavik and Star Wars and the SDI program and ending the Cold War. I mean, who in Washington is working on peace or strategic alignment for the U.S. or strength? I mean, we can clearly see that it's an inside job to weaken the United States. We just look like some pitiful giant. So the calls are coming from inside the house. I mean, you always turn on talk radio and there's some external enemy. I'm not really worried about that. I'm worried about what's happening right here in our own borders. And well, actually, we don't have borders. So whatever's happening here in the aptly named Orwellian homeland. And this is what's going on, folks. I mean, we've got massive movement in the rest of the world away from the dollar. This is going to spell, again, changes economically, sociologically, you name it, it's coming, and we've got to prepare for it. One of the ways you can prepare for it, and I'll keep plugging this, but you know, this is parapolitics and precious metals. One of the ways you can prepare is to get outside of that system, own physical precious metals. We offer that here at Wise Wolf. You can go to wolfpack.gold. It's easy. You can set up as low as $50 a month. You can set up a precious metals membership. We pick your metals for you, send you a detailed invoice all the way up to, now we have it for $5,000. We have a way up on the Zen Wolf package. So you can go to $50. I've also found too, and I want to talk more about this next week on the Wise Wolf Gold and Crypto Show. As I get further and further down the road with my membership program, I can see why the bigs didn't do it, but I like the fact that we're closer to the earth, closer to regular people. It is a little bit more labor intensive. It's a different market, but I like it. And I like the fact that Wise Wolf really led the way on that. All right. Let's get into this article by my friend, Don Jeffries. And again, I want to, as we go into the 2024 election, I got a lot more media coming out. I just signed a couple of deals where I'm going to be in a lot more shows. And because that's one of the ways that we get the name of my company out there and, give analysis and all that. You guys need to bear with me because I'm not going to be, and I'm talking to the audience that's, you know, coming from my traditional talk radio. Just bear with me. I have the same values as you. I'm going to give you some different analysis on the election and what that means to me. You got to understand, I'm not doing it because, and I'm going to get into this article, a lot of the things that are coming out of the election, the MAGA movement, and I'm hopeful that there's some rhetoric that will be useful in a sense of educating people when we talk about, you know, when if MAGA and Trump are talking about getting out of wars, well, I want people to embrace that. Now, it doesn't seem that it in and especially this last year, especially into 2023, I don't know if a lot of people paid attention, but there was a lot of people calling for war that should have otherwise, you know, been for peace. So we're still a long way off from being the peace party that I hoped it would have been with Ron Paul and others. But there is some good. It's not all bad, right? And I want to get into this article by my friend Don Jeffries. It's just a great piece. And it's weird that when I went live, somehow all the articles I pulled up like disappeared off my screen. So I wasn't able to pull that back up, but we went to donaldjeffries.media. I knew I can do that in a pinch and I can find his articles. But I know he's on Zero Hedge today. So congratulations, Don, for getting on Zero Hedge, which is an accomplishment. A lot of eyes on that today. Trumpenstein and the death of politics. I love Don's been talking about Trumpenstein for a long time. He says, I'm the guy who coined the term the Trumpenstein Project. My good friend John Barber came up with Trump agnostic to describe how we felt about the former reality TV star. He says, I mean, not John Barber, who has been described as the godfather of reality television. I may very well be the last Trump agnostic standing. This is Don Jeffries. It's not only the smallest minority group in the world, but I'm not even sure who any other members are at this point. Mr. Trumpenstein thesis is that the elite recruited the most bombastic and obnoxious personality they could and inserted him into the presidential campaign. They assigned him the role of a populist outsider and wrote some alluring rhetoric for him, which was often revolutionary. He wooed millions, including me. Millions of others instantly hated him. That's how programming works. I don't think he could have possibly be sincere, but I couldn't completely discount the notion that a billionaire could theoretically become fed up with what he'd witnessed behind the scenes. At any rate, Trump selected his cabinet and the psyop became obvious. Choosing Mike Pence as his running mate gained him nothing politically. Were the evangelicals going to vote for Hillary without Pence on the ticket? Asked Don. He also lost however many gay votes he was going to get. For whatever reason, gays hate Pence like no other politician. Trump redeemed himself a bit in his inaugural address, which was the best since JFK's, in my opinion. But as he announced the choices for his cabinet, each one brought an additional shake of the head, an additional dose of delusionment. Nikki Haley had been the loudest never-Trumpers. Trump, nevertheless, first, offered her the prestigious position of Secretary of State, and she ultimately became the U.S. ambassador. Jeff Sessions seemed like a decent choice as Attorney General, given his strong stance on immigration, but his lust for our militarized police forces came through loud and clear. He actually wanted to bolster the odious asset forfeiture laws, which are the foundation of the corrupt policing and profit system. He also inexplicably recused himself from any potential prosecution of Hillary Clinton. You know, crooked Hillary, lock her up and all that. But Trump let his supporters know there was not going to be a prosecution of his old friend. When he began complimenting her during his speech declaring victory, he declared she was good people and didn't want to prosecute her, which he promised to do countless times during his 2016 campaign. His second attorney general, William Barr, was even worse, prosecuting only Trump supporters. It's so true. You know, I'm having flashbacks reading this. I remember, gosh, guys, you know, it's been such a disastrous road for me. I was a huge Trump supporter. I listen to my rhetoric and I go back in the Wayback Machine, you know, and I think about things that I said. And because I so desperately, I'm like, Don, I want to believe, you know, show me. Like, I want to believe that, because it should be possible, you know, that we foster some sort of resistance to the ruling class and the damage that they've done. And especially the commercials that Trump was running at the end of 2016, just pure genius. I have to say, I mean, it was like, 2 minutes long, and it showed images of Janet Yellen, the establishment, and it would say they have trillions on the line betting against you, the American people, the voter. So it was really, I mean, it was next level. And I, and if you go back through my, and this is true, you can go look and go to my Twitter feed at Tony Arterburn and go back to 2016, go back to October of 2016. I don't make a lot of predictions, especially not that bold, but I'm like, you, and this was after was it James Comey came out and announced that they were reopening the investigation into the Wiener laptop and Hillary's emails. And I said, he's got it. He's going to win. It's enough. It's just enough. And I'm like, he's going to be the president. And I told everybody around me, I didn't have a lot of money, but I took what I had and I put it in Bitcoin and I bet on him. One of those online betting houses where you can use crypto. I did that. And I mean, it was, the odds were like what media called it, like 97% against. I said, this is just enough. It's just enough. And that's how I always felt with politics. It's just gut level. And since I've been paying attention to it since I was a kid. And so it was a huge disappointment because I'd been writing articles. I was the first of the congressional candidates that had ran in the previous cycle to endorse. I mean, they even did a write up on it. I had met and done radio with Katrina Pearson, who was his national spokesperson for the longest time. So I was a huge backer, and this gives me to be where I'm at now and do analysis that, you know, again, you point out the, whether you're talking about the lockdowns or the executive orders or the fiscal damage that was done, the precedence of the bump stocks and a gun control by executive order, Operation Warp Speed. I just keep going. Or like Don's pointing out in this article, it's totally clear. You go to something Ann Coulter said, and this, Donald Trump only got like $16,000 in donation from hedge funds. Hillary Clinton got millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of hedge fund donations. He didn't owe anything to Goldman Sachs. Yet, we give all the appointments to Goldman Sachs people in the finance world. It was a once in a multi-generational chance. That's why I'm stuck on it, and I just keep going. Okay, well, I don't believe in this, and I'm supposed to just be willfully blind and just say, well, it's going to be different this time. Well, I hope so. Again, you guys can make up your own mind and you can do as you want when it comes to voting or supporting whoever. But just color me skeptical, and that's where I'm going to stay. And I'm going to keep reciting the facts, and I'm going to keep going over the actual history. It's like we got into a relationship with a narcissist, and we really did, because they rewrite history and the people that support him rewrite history. Oh, that didn't happen. You're crazy. Let's go back to the article. We know that Hillary was scheming to orchestrate the Russia, Russia, Russia PSYOP before the 2016 election. This was revealed not by some lowly thought criminal like me, but by the beloved former CIA director John Brennan. They don't come any more reliable than CIA officials, as our, quote, free press regularly reminds us. So yes, along with the ridiculous Steele dossier, Trump was indeed under attack by the swamp he vowed to drain during his entire 4 years in office. This is invariably the excuse given by his adoring fans, but they never explain why, as he was under such an unprecedented assault, he never attempted to fight back, never used the considerable powers of his office. Instead, he produced a steady stream of often juvenile tweets. This is a great open question. Theodore Roosevelt called it the bully pulpit. I always wondered, Franklin Roosevelt, again, say what you will about Franklin Roosevelt, but he had a knack for quelling the anxieties of the people with his fireside chats. Why not do that? Why not go to, I've always wondered if you're under siege by the deep state and you're ruling, or if you have a position of power, go direct to the people. It reminds me of a story of after the end of World War II, and it's just massive devastation in the Pacific. You know, we'd firebomb Tokyo, Curtis LeMay, even Robert McNamara, young Robert McNamara was, you talk about the statistician just writing out all the little bombing raids and filling in the gaps so they could have maximum kill ratios. And we'd burn Tokyo, and then we dropped the two atomic bombs. And so the Japan surrendered, you know, the famous signing on the Missouri, but no one had actually gone to Japan. And MacArthur flew in without any security and landed in Tokyo, had no idea what was on the ground there. And his aides were like, well, you can't get out, General. I mean, we don't have any security. We're by ourselves. And he turned and said, the Japanese people will protect me because I'm their conqueror. Because he knew the Asian mind, like it would be dishonorable for him to be murdered. So they're an honor-based, shame-based culture. And so he stepped out and walked into the crowd, which is a massive gamble. But that's how he knew if he was going to be the viceroy, he's going to run Japan in the post-war years to rebuild it. He'd have to have some authority. So he, you know, that's what a leader does. And I've often wondered that, you know, I think the American people would protect you if you just tell the truth and you come out and you look, you just go direct to them. You know, you don't in run around it. You don't play 4D chess. You don't do something bad so you can do something good. You go direct. That's what I've always thought. I've wondered why he didn't do that. FBI Director Christopher Wray was appointed to his position by Trump. That's right. This maverick outsider chose an undistinguished, never Trumper to head the bureau that would be instrumental in an investigation of Hillary or any other villain from the swamp. So naturally, Ray concentrated from the very beginning of his tenure in office on following the deluded Russiagate fantasies instead of focusing on those who were attacking Trump unfairly. Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller was chosen not to investigate Hillary's destruction of emails and a laptop or her scheme to tie Trump to Russian collusion, but Donald Trump himself. Mueller and William Barr, Trump's second attorney general, just happened to be best friends. No one said the Trumpenstein Project had to be believable. I remember this. What some of the first shows that were coming back after years of layoff in radio. And that was one of the first stories I covered when we were talking about William Barr and everybody's, I remember even the QAnon people were putting out memes showing like that Barr was going to like really set. And first of all, it was Trust Sessions. Anybody remember QAnon, Trust Sessions, Trust the Plan? I remember. And I was going, this is a complete psyop. I was never, just for the record, I was never fooled by any of that. But then they hired Bill Barr. And I thought, well, I know who this guy is. And, you know, he used to be the attorney general for George Bush 41, Mr. Skull and Bones, and massive ties to intelligence. He defended Lon Hurucci, who was the sniper who shot Vicky Weaver, you know, holding her child at Ruby Ridge in the head, you know, the sniper, which, again, this is the circle this guy runs in. And then I just happened to realize that, you know, William Barr and Robert Mueller's, they go to Sunday school together. Like their wives are friends. Like this is not the degree of separation here. And they weren't investigating any of the deep staters, you know, the wiretaps. And it's so funny when you get into these weeds, it's like, well, you're saying Trump's not a victim of overreach from the guy. He absolutely is. But my question is, why not fight back? Why not hire people that voted for you? Can I ask that question without being attacked? Can you hire people that have America first in their blood, like that want to do that? Because I promise you, Nikki Haley doesn't, you know, it's like, you don't have to, they hired the mustache. He hired John Bolton, you know, and Trump did some great stuff like going to North Korea and talking to Kim Jong-un, trying to set the boundaries. We've been, the DMZ, the 38th parallel has been there since the 50s. I mean, it's time. Like we maybe open it up, kind of have a Berlin Wall falling moment, you know, tear down this wall. But it was sabotaged by the mustache. I mean, personnel is policy, ladies and gentlemen. You guys know this. Trump wasn't playing 4D chess. He wasn't following the old adage, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. And I don't believe he's actually as stupid as he usually sounds. Covfefe and hamburgers weren't some mystical code that mere mortals couldn't fathom, but I don't think they were part of an act. Covfefe, by the way, is now an accepted word. It has its own Wikipedia page, which some of us don't. Don Jeffries should have his own Wikipedia page. I agree with that. The absurd misspellings and grammatical errors, the repeating of the same word or phrase ad nauseum, all just exacerbated the hatred that millions felt for him and endeared him to millions of others. So some inferred that Trump didn't know how to read, that he was illiterate, like all of those athletes who are supposed to believe are college graduates. Maybe Trump was just a 1% version of the Affirmative Action Project. QAnon. This is where we get QAnon was a necessary invention of some intelligence agency. There had to be a way to explain to MAGA, the MAGA faithful, why Trump was surrounding himself with never Trumpers and not attempting to fulfill any of his campaign promises. So millions became disciples of Q drops and never blinked when the continuous predictions never came true. They actually believe the military exemplified by Trump hater General Mark Milley, who was naturally appointed by Trump, was in charge behind the scenes. They claimed child sex traffickers were being rounded up. There were secret trials of Hillary and other deep state criminals being held at Guantanamo Bay. I read recently where Oprah Winfrey is secretly on trial now. These white hats behave as inconspicuously as white supremacists do. Yes. And folks, it is, especially being in a business where I get, you know, a lot of people from the conservative side, I get a lot of calls, people visiting me in person. And it's one of the saddest things to ever watch. You see an otherwise intelligent person, and they, when they crafted the QAnon PSYOP, it is so very well done. And it's basic phraseologies and things that are useful. You go back and you look at the early 1920s, earliest 20th century of Operation Trust by the Soviets and the Bolsheviks, totally interchangeable. And it was like, trust the plan, white hats in control, patriots in control, you know, things like that. They just took a playbook and used it over again to convince you that to do nothing. To make sure that you're not dissatisfied, that you are engaged in doing nothing. You know, that's one of the phrases, get your popcorn. You know, watch your, I've been paying attention to this for a while. Hats off to my friend Billy Ray Valentine, the great Billy Ray with the Infinite Fringe podcast, because I've been talking to him for years. I really thought this would go away, but it never lost momentum. The QAnon deal, it is something unto itself. Let's see. At any rate, Trump never kept any of his promises to American citizens. He was so loyal to Israel that they named streets after him. He didn't try to end birthright citizenship or the foreign visa worker program or sanctuary cities or DACA. He somehow managed to deport fewer illegals than Barack Obama. That couldn't have been easy, so give him some credit. He let statues be torn down, cities burn, and looters run wild during the summer of 2020. He did tweet a lot. Never sent the National Guard in, like the Republican governor of Massachusetts did when Ron DeSantis shipped a handful of migrants to the entitled community of Martha's Vineyard. Isn't that true? I remember, if you go back through the archives, there's in May of 2020 and into June, I just about had enough. And I was banging on this desk table saying, "What, you know, President Trump, where is the arrest of the people that are funding this coast-to-coast looting and rioting of our country? You're scaring children." I mean, he's like, "What is, we came all the way for this. We went through Valley Forge. And the Civil War, and we went through World War II, and we went through the beaches of Normandy for this, so we can have billionaires, foreign billionaires funding Marxist radicals flying all over the country and people leaving piles of bricks. Who is this? You know, why don't we send a million? Again, these are open questions. And I know I'll get a lot of hate for asking them because I'm supposed to just believe. If Trump had been a real outsider, you would have seen people like Ron and or Rand Paul, Paul Craig Roberts, Pat Buchanan, Dinesh D'Souza, maybe even Alex Jones named to key positions in his administration. I know the response to this is he had to name the insiders. They would never have approved those others. Well, Trump should have at least tried. Well, thank you, Donald Jeffries. That's what I say. Historically, some nominees have been rejected by Congress. For instance, Jimmy Carter, in his best attempted move, tried to get JFK's speechwriter Ted Sorensen approved as CIA director. I don't think Trump had a single nominee rejected. And considering how much he was despised by both parties, that ought to be really, that ought to really tell you something. Trump selected nothing but swamp creatures. But despite Trump rescuing a black, but despite Trump rescuing a black rapper from Sweden and engineering the release of an unfairly convicted black woman from prison, at the behest of Kim Kardashian, no less millions declared that he was a racist, period. In all reality, these moves on behalf of black citizens were two of the few actions. Trump was responsible for his entire presidential term. The closest he came to being a racist was very reasonably saying there were good people on both sides of the Charlottesville protest. He never mentioned the word white in reference to Caucasians in 4 years of presidency. He certainly never uttered the words great replacement. He did brag incessantly about how low black unemployment was, though. Actually, he called it African-American unemployment. It's a white, Don says, it's a white cuck thing. You wouldn't understand. But enough about how different Trump's rhetoric was from his record. He definitely had and still has the right enemies. All the worst people in the world, the modern doorkeepers of Satan, hate him with a fervor that even Adolf Hitler couldn't match. Of course, Russiagate was a joke, and it was documented to have the illegitimate brainchild of Hillary Clinton. Who wasn't prosecuted by the Trump in Justice Department, but continues to rant about how the 2016 election was stolen from her, almost like Trump does about the 2020 election. Only Trump is being prosecuted for complaining about his election. Some allegations of electoral fraud are more equal than others. Trump was the subject of a more obscene and distasteful public comments and media ridicule than any in American history, more than Huey Long, more than Richard Nixon, more than Jim Garrison. There was a play running for months in New York that celebrated the mock assassination of Donald Trump. Upstanding America 2.0 celebrity Snoop Dogg also depicted the assassination of Trump in a video. Trump would repay the venerable Snoop Dogg by pardoning his friend, the president of Death Row Records, and not Julian Assange as he left office. Trump was certainly a strange sort of racist, kind of like all those white supremacists who remain in the shadows overseeing the Great Replacement. Celebrities showed absolute disdain for Trump in their intellectual offerings on Twitter. So did virtually every journalist in our state-controlled media. Indeed, Trump's one enduring legacy may have been popularized the phrase fake news and inadvertently exposed just how bad our, quote, free press really is. No matter how many black rappers he rescued or how few illegal immigrants he actually deported, the constant refrain was that Trump was a hopeless racist. In fact, he came to define the term. And of course, everyone who supported him were racist too. Trump actually instituting the unconstitutional lockdown, proving that he could do something after all, and claiming credit for it and praising the dangerous warp speed vaccine didn't matter. He was still a racist and responsible for all the incorrigible anti-vaxxers. Trump's three nominees to the Supreme Court were attacked viciously by the usual suspects. And his loyalists, who confronted with the stark evidence of his inactivity as president, invariably point to them as his greatest accomplishment, except that one of them, Amy Coney Barrett, votes against him every time. Brett Kavanaugh is hit or miss. Only Neil Gorsuch has been pretty decent. And yet those with Trump derangement syndrome, and this is a very real mental disorder, continue to portray him as a right-wing extremist. White supremacists, perhaps insurrectionists like Trump, that are guilty of thought crimes they never committed. Well, we'll see how they rule on his politicized prosecutions of remaining electoral disputes. So far, their track records don't give much hope for MAGA loyalists. So let's look at these Trump show trials. I don't know what the Soviet legal process was really like before they sent dissidents off to Siberia, or how corrupt it would have been. Trump was convicted and forced to pay millions to a certifiable lunatic who paints trees blue and named her cat Vagina for sexually assaulting her in a crowded department store dressing room at some point in the 90s. She couldn't recall the exact date, seriously, and she is on the record of having joked about having had sex with Donald Trump on social media. She is the poster child for uncredible witness. But a jury and one of the endless biased judges assigned to Trump's cases ruled in favor, as the woke white woman say, "I believe her." I don't know if we'll be able to finish the entire thing. I'm trying to get through the heart. This is a great article. Don is just really taking this apart as he normally does. Truly doing a magnificent job. Let's see. I want to skip a little bit ahead of TDS. TDS has claimed millions of victims of Trump derangement syndrome. It's non-fatal in physical terms, but it is absolutely lethal to the intellect. I've seen many a friend fall victim to it. It causes one to lose all sense of perspective. The victim begins to believe that the intelligence agencies, the military-industrial complex, and the mainstream media are all fine and worthwhile institutions. They actually believe the Trumpenstein Project opposes these forces, which represent the deep state he talked about, the swamp he vowed to drain. And so George W. Bush is now a hero? He opposed Trump? Demonic Dick Cheney's vile offspring Liz is now the sexiest thing since Michelle Obama? Forget about the dead intern in Joe Scarborough's old congressional office. He hates Trump. It's true. Like, it's so true. TDS and, like, just opposing Trump whitewashes all the other things that you've ever done. And like, oh, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So it doesn't matter what you did. To those with TDS, all politics is viewed through the prism of Trumpenstein. Because Trump spoke out against the senseless wars, those who hate him have to be in favor of war. See, I stand with Ukraine. Because Trump criticized the third world infrastructure, those who hate him want the roads, bridges, and power grids to remain in their present laughable state. Except for getting rid of any racist roads, that by the way, there are such a thing as racist, and the rest assured by the saintly Joe Biden that, sorry about that. I messed up on that little part there. He'll be, sorry, I'm reading ahead and it makes me laugh. I'm sorry, folks. He'll be on it like a little white girl with a fresh scent of no more tears in her hair since Trump often hinted at conspiratorial thinking. Those with TDS can no longer believe in any conspiracies. Well, except Russiagate and the Trump-directed January 6th insurrection. The only issue where they face a real dilemma is the COVID vaccine. Despite 90%+ of his supporters being skeptical about it, Trump continues to tirelessly promote it. And yet, while those with TDS enthusiastically embrace the vaccine, they curiously manage to ignore the fact that their sworn enemy claims credit for it. While Trump threw the January 6th protesters under the bus by not marching with them as he promised, didn't pardon them before leaving office, and rarely mentions them in his circus barker rallies, he is still blasted for orchestrating the entire thing. His speech proves he didn't incite anyone. He told them to march peacefully and patriotically, yet the media, all with TDS, insisted that he did. to them, the worst overreaction to a protest in history becomes an attempted overthrow of democracy. We have seen several states take another unprecedented step in voting to bar Donald Trump, a former president and current frontrunner in the polls, from the ballot. To their credit, the Supreme Court just voted 9-0 in Trump's favor of this question, but the attempt illustrates the role of his scripted spectacle. All's fair in the Trumpenstein Project, politicized prosecutions, efforts to prevent him from running again. The leadership of the Republicans and his other supposed party continues to be repelled, even the possibility of making America great, let alone emphasizing America first. Yet Trump never says America first any longer, but it's still an ominous prospect for those suffering from TDS. Can you imagine the horror of putting your own country's interests first? People in Donald Trump's social and financial class, even if they aren't ex-presidents of the United States, don't get prosecuted. They are unequivocally above the law. The courts are primarily for convincing poor and working class defendants who are often innocent. You can scour the huge prison system in this country and you won't find any one former percenters incarcerated there. The system is designed to protect them in extremely rare instances where they're actually charged with a crime. Those with Trump's resources should have a dream team of legal representatives that puts OJ's lawyers to shame. Instead, Trump's lawyers have been laughingstocks, the kind of ghetto Dennison might have assigned to him. And unlike every wealthy man before him, Trump cannot seem to win in any courtroom. This should give the Trumpenstein Project away. Oh, he's so right about that. It's like, what do you, it's kind of like when at the end of the 2020 election and, you know, the aftermath and Stop the Steal, and you kept thinking, where are they going to get, where's the legal team? And you just had Sidney Powell saying, release the Kraken, and Rudy Giuliani's like, you know, his hair dye streaming into his face. Like there wasn't any. As David Knight often points out, it's, you know, the first 8,000 you gave went to the RNC and Trump. If you gave money during that time, it's $250 million. Trumpenstein has destroyed traditional politics, the childish cafeteria food fights on social media, the immature nicknames. Trump's penis size even made it into the 2016 presidential election. I remember that. The more extreme TDS patients call him micropenis. And if things devolve logically, perhaps Trump will. I can't say this on the air. It's a family show, but you should go check out the article. My friend Don is one of the funniest people he's an American treasure, and we're running out of time too. Let's see if I can get down to the bottom here, the article. I wish I could have read it word for word. I didn't give myself enough time. This is thanks to the giant PSYOP, there will never be a viable third party movement in this country. Not that there was much of a chance before, but virtually all Americans have been subjected to this intensive programming. And they're back and mired into two disastrous choices, Democrat or Republican, evil versus stupid. The millions afflicted with TDS must vote for putrid Democrats, regardless of wars, censorship, and massive inflation, because Trump. The millions who cling naively to Trump will vote Republicans because Trump as well. Both parties care about the children, this is in quotations. Both insist on a strong defense. Both support the troops, respect the police. But there is no such thing as a free lunch. Unless you're a billionaire or an illegal immigrant, hate speech isn't free speech. Say African-American three times and click your heels. In the days before Trump, things were awful. There was never anyone worth voting for. Thus, the popularity of choosing the lesser of two evils. It was accepted by all that two evils would always be the choice. To be fair, Trump had at least made politics more exciting. When he's attacking the unspeakably evil Democrats or their insufferable mouthpieces in the media, it's hard not to applaud or at least laugh. Don says, I am rooting for Trump to be selected as president again this year, not because I think he'll do anything good, But for the sheer entertainment value, CNN and MSNBC would become must-watch TV. It's surely a sad commentary on the world's greatest democracy that this is the best we can hope for. Again, DonaldJeffries.media, folks. I wish I had a little bit longer on the clock and I would have read it verbatim. We got, I think I'm about 90% through it. But what a great article. I was reading that this morning before I went on the David Knight show. And just want to say congratulations to Don again. He puts out some magnificent stuff. Go over to his Substack. Go to DonaldJeffries.media and subscribe to his Substack. He just had that put out on Zero Hedge. And we'll be seeing Don tomorrow on his show here on the America Unplugged channel. I always produce for that on Fridays. And again, Saturday on the America Unplugged channel at noon. So be sure and tune into that. I've got lots of new stuff coming. Be sure and subscribe to the podcast channel anywhere you can find Paratruth or the Arterburn radio transmission, and subscribe to both and the Wise Wolf Golden Crypto show. I need some subscribers. Give us a review over there. Help the algorithms, because you're not going to find me unless you're really searching for me. So appreciate all of you guys. And I got Beans the Brave here. She says, have a great weekend. We'll be back next week for sure. Lots of shows coming up. We'll see you guys soon. Take care of each other. End of transmission.